Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us on Human Rights Demand. This is the Dr. Ansari's Human Rights Updates program. Dr. Ansari is an international human rights attorney who takes time out of his busy schedule to get with us and talk to us about human rights. He does this every Tuesday at 1 p.m. And we are going to interrupt Nina Simone because we have Dr. Ansari on the line now. And we have such a full program that we will not even spare the few minutes for Nina Simone to sing. I wish that I knew what it feels like to be free. But we can all recognize that freedom is very constricted in the world, especially getting that way here in America, where the U.S. Supreme Court has recently upheld NDAA, that's the National Defense Authorization Act, including its provision to hold American citizens in concentration camps without any criminal charges, without any opportunity for defense. We know that that law passed in November 2011. It passed Congress. And then on December 31st, 2011, President Obama signed it. And in the spring of 2012, some of our journalists and writers took it before the Manhattan court, federal court in Manhattan, and Judge Forrest, who is an Obama appointee, declared that law to be unconstitutional. And we know that on Election Day of 2012, it was somewhere around there, it was appealed to the Supreme Court, and also it was appealed to the Superior Court there in New York, and it was ruled that they did have that right temporarily while the Supreme Court makes the final decision. Well, we've received the Supreme Court's final decision on NDAA, and the Supreme Court decided that the bill does not violate Americans' constitutional rights. Being able to, and this is a White House power, to point to any person or any group of persons and say off to a concentration camp with them. We heard from Justice Scalia, who is a United States Supreme Court Justice, I think it was maybe a month or 2 months ago when he was visiting a law school in Hawaii, and he spoke to the students there about holding Americans in concentration camps, because we know this has been done before to the Japanese, and he said that he can certainly see that happening again. So that let me know, when he said that months ago, that the Supreme Court was probably going to ban this bill to be okay, and they did. So Dr. Ansari is here with us now. And I'm so glad to welcome you, Dr. Ansari. How are you?
I'm wonderful, Mary. I'm wonderful. How are you today?
Oh, I'm praising God.
Good, good, good. Well, what you just cited is a prelogue to today's show is just truly appalling for so many, many reasons. Number one, for a court, any court, to say that a person can be locked up without due process of law is just horrendously against every type of jurisprudential law or doctrine. In the United States, it's against the Fourth Amendment, which is due process of law that you must have due process of law before your life, liberty, or property is taken away. And surely your liberty is taken away when a government official or officer arrests you without charges and takes you away. This is incredible that a Supreme Court who is supposed to uphold the Constitution would say this. This means, because he said this, and they are Supreme Court justices, that we now are living in a state of lawlessness. And truthfully, I have to examine the decision further, Mary, and I have to look at the Authorization Act in more detail, because it just boggles the imagination, my imagination as a lawyer. It just boggles my imagination that a main concept of human criminal justice and human interaction between the state and the government has been reduced to an assumption that you've done something wrong, and because of that, because of the assumption, whether it has been or not, can arrest you. Now the prior standard was that before a government person, a state person, whether he's a police officer, transit cop, or whatever, has to have articulable, reasonable suspicion before he can, before the state officer can even stop you. So if that is the Fourth Amendment, then how could that be constitutional that the state could arrest you on an assumption, not a reasonable, articulable suspicion, which was the standard that we were all taught in law school and that Justice Scalia was taught in law school. So what kind of emergency exception? Now, when we look at the international exceptions, which are called derogations, when a state can deviate from a firm rule of international law, we see that this is a rule that can't be derogated except in a true national emergency, and that a national emergency has to be an articulable national emergency that is supported by evidence and facts, and that the arrest or the detention can only be temporary until evidence is deduced that person is someone that should be fall upon the exception and should be held. And even in that case, if the person is, and that's a hearing, that the person deserves a hearing. So to hear that the National Defense Authorization Act just allows any officer of the state, based upon anything that just may float through his brain, that he can arrest you and drag you off to a detention camp, is just mind-boggling, Mary. Because it flies in the face of so of not only the Constitution but the International Bill of Rights, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, which the United States has signed and which is in United States law, it's a contradiction to law. But see, I'm not that surprised, Mary, because the rejection of affirmative action is something that the United States was not able to do either. They were not able to reject a special measure for African Americans or any minority, but African Americans, and to not be entitled to special measures. And the reason why I picked out the African Americans is because the African Americans have a right to recover and to be repaired and be rehabilitated from the deprivations in education that occurred during slavery and post-slavery, and up until now, in which we are, which our children are regulated to these really poor public schools, and then expected to, and that is an expectation of the government, which is unreasonable, that without special measures, we will be able to close the disparity in education between our children and the white children. And that is that fantasy that affirmative action is no longer necessary because we've achieved racial equality is a fiction and fantasy of the same Supreme Court that we are now examining is saying that they can round us up on an assumption and send us to off to some concentration camp.
And as a matter of fact, they don't even have to name the assumption. There's no need for the White House, and this is a power that was given to the White House only, Congress, not even the Supreme Court, this power to appoint people to concentration camps was given by NDAA to the White House. So there is not even a need mentioned to name the particular suspicion that you're being arrested.
This is a legal fantasy. It's a fantasy to say for some court who doesn't have the power to say these things, because they don't have the power. They don't have the constitutional power to say these things, because the Constitution says very plainly that you cannot deprive a U.S. citizen of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Therefore, a court, a Supreme Court, to say that you can is an abomination. It's a fantasy. It's a fantasy. We are living in a lawless society, if that is the case. And that appears to be the case. It's just a fantasy. The Scalia, Roberts, Thomas, they are not entitled to and deserve to be listened to anymore. They just it's just that these decisions have totally put us in a posture of being without a court. This decision has totally disenfranchised our children from higher education, college at a United States university, and we're going to fight it. We have the tools to fight this, and this is the reason why we have discounted the course for UN human rights monitoring and UN human rights defenders, because we must exercise every means that we can, either to fight the U.S. Supreme Court decision in a world court, or we will we might as well just pack it up and leave this country. Or two, we should succeed as the others, as some states have because of these abominations of law and these fantastical exaggerations of right-wing radicalism in the court, that some states are considering succeeding, and certainly African-Americans should consider at this point to succeed from the from the U.S. And when I say succeed, that's kind of the wrong terminology, because we can't succeed from a country in which we are endemically a part of as indigenous people. So what the word I'm really is really more appropriate is to intercede, into our own political enclaves in the cities and in the states that we are in, and to erect a collective entity presence so that we won't be abused by these fantastical, radical Zionist rulings of the United States Supreme Court. This is just an abomination in law. It's not an aberration, because it's just too far above being an aberration. It's an abomination when you have a Supreme Court or any court, a municipal court, a traffic court, to say that someone could have something taken away from them as precious as their liberty because somebody said so.
Yes, that's exactly what it takes. The White House say so, and that's it. And you don't, you know, a lot of times I've seen videos.
Well, who is he? Is he Hitler? Who is the White House? The Pope? Hitler? He's infallible? This is ridiculous. This is supposed to be a democracy. So you don't have Hitlers. You don't have dictators. You don't have some golden person that says you go to the concentration camp, and you can't, and without due process. That's ridiculous.
Well, I want you to know, Dr. Ansari, that when I went to the, it happened in 2011, I went to the Martin Luther King Day parade here downtown Atlanta in January after it had happened, after the bill had passed and President Obama had signed it. And I was talking to the people about it, you know, announcing it, because the news didn't. Our mainstream media played it down. And I wanted to know, had the news reached the people, that we didn't live in anything even resembling a democracy. And I was surprised that out of that whole crowd, and I was right there in front of the church where Reverend King preached. He preached the gospel of Jesus Christ, who was a man who recognized and really had a heart for human rights. And so anybody who follows him has got to have a heart for human rights. And so I asked the people, did they know that right now police could come and round all of us up and take us to a camp just off the word of the White House? And most of the people, I think that out of that whole hundreds of people standing there, only one of them had heard something about NDAA. And I would urge all media, especially African-American media companies, to do their damn job and let people know the climate that we're in. They need to do their damn job.
Well, it's a secretive climate of the media, as we know, when we have to take a real examination of the Caucasian Zionist media. And I call it the Caucasian Zionist media because the Caucasian and Zionist elite run the media. They own the media stations. They own the radio stations. They own the TV stations. As an experiment to anyone on any of these critical issues that we're talking about, to look at different media, look at what Al Jazeera media is saying about these things. Look and see what RT, the German media broadcast, a Russian station, is saying about this. Look and see what foreign media outlets are saying what the news is, because if you live in the United States, you are not getting the news. You are getting propagandized. You are not getting the news. The news is packaged to push you in a certain political way.
Well, let me ask you, Dr. Ansari, what does this have? How does this affect so-called black media, how does this affect that? Because I have not seen the truth about NDAA and any so-called black-owned media.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. And black media is not black media. Black media is white media. And the reason why I'm saying that is because the news sources that black media derives its content from is the white media sources, and UPI and AP. And that is the reason why we are taking the time out to train political commentators and political correspondents, because we do not have media coverage. We do not have neutral and objective media coverage. So because the media is not supposed to be black or white media or mainstream, it is supposed to be media, a medium of expression, so that the people, unfettered, would be able to obtain information so that they can make their own decisions. This is the purity of media and in what it's supposed to be. It's not supposed to be black, white, mainstream, radical. It is supposed to be a medium of expression. And the people that we have in our media that control the African American media, let's be fair, our African American newspapers are under capitalized, so many of them only have about 5 or 6 pages, and most of them are on local events, and then they incorporate white media content. So they don't have, and their editors and their writers, the black media writers, are not properly trained. This is the reason why we want to train them. And what we want to train them in is the international law, so that they have an international perspective on foreign as well as domestic content. For example, the things that we're talking about now, if black media was trained, they would be editorializing this on the front pages. You would be black. This would be the affirmative action ban and the reasons why, and the reasons why it's illegal, and the reason why the decision of the Supreme Court is illegal and should be challenged. That should be blasted if we had an informed media. So we have.
Well, let me just say to you, Dr. Ansari, that. Even though we will continue this discussion until 1:45 Eastern, our people who joined us by computer online will only be with us until 1:30. So I think this is a good time for you to let them know your contact information and how they can get in touch with you to sign up for these classes, so that it will be aired while we have our online presence with people who joined us right now and who are live online.
Thank you so much, Mary, because it's so critically important that we go from this uninformed, kind of foolish, kind of not understanding, misinformed, disinformed state to an informed state. And we can only do that by education and us educating ourselves on what the important things that we should do. So we've constructed a educational system, an online system, in which we can train a number of different critical issues and frame them in a way that they can be monitored as well as defended. And these issues for the human rights defenders deal with everything that we've been talking about: expressions, the right to express ourselves without the fear of arrest, the right to close the disparity gap in education because of slavery and segregation. These are reparative remedies in the course matter that we talk about, and how to file communications when the United States has violated our rights. And from what we've just discussed, there should be at least 15 communications or complaints coming from us concerning those issues that will be addressed in the Inter-American Forum. And so the best way to, we have several monitoring categories. One is on political prisoners. Two is on reparative measures. Three is on expressions and political expressions. Four is on genocide and crimes against humanity. Five is human rights for people who are physically and mentally challenged, and six is the right to education or non-discrimination in education.
So I just wanted to say that we certainly look forward to learning our human rights from international human rights attorneys, and we certainly look forward to the courses that will be offered through the American Institute for Human Rights, of which you are dean. And we look forward to that, Dr. Ansari, because we're in deep trouble here. I'm reading from the American, and it says the New American, and it doesn't matter where you read it from, you know, but either way you go, the Supreme Court tacitly endorses indefinite detention under NDAA. That's the headline. The Supreme Court tacitly endorses indefinite detention under NDAA. It says its official each branch of the federal government has signed off on indefinite detention of Americans as authorized by the National Defense Authorization Act. And the way the Supreme Court did it is that they refused to hear the case, so that left it in place because they refused to hear it and they gave no comment on it.
That's the tacit acceptance of. Well, let me give the how we can deal with this. Contact us at administration@scholarsofpeace.com. That's the email address. If you're interested in any of the courses, understanding U.S. being a certified U.S. monitor or certified UN human rights defender with access to the United Nations to file these complaints, to bring the United States back into the line of civilized countries, administration@scholarsofpeace.com. Drop us a line. We'll get you an application. We'll give you a survey of our courses, and we'll sign you up because we do need human rights. We need to monitor this situation. Any moves by any filings by the federal government for detention, we need to stop the reverse the affirmative action ban so that our children can get back in school. administration@scholarsofpeace.com. We don't have any alternatives. We don't have a Black Congressional Caucus we can go to. We don't have a Black president we can go to. We don't have Black organizations we can go to because they're untrained. So if you need the training, if you want to make a difference, administration@scholarsofpeace.com.
Well, thank you, Dr. Ansari. And another thing that I wanted to mention on this radio broadcast that you might be aware of is that Reverend Edward Pinckney was arrested 2 weeks ago, and he was kept overnight. He was released, but he's under house arrest and a gag order. He's not allowed to use the Internet at all, so he's not allowed to speak on his Sunday broadcast. We had a wonderful broadcast on Sunday, and I encourage everyone to go and listen to Reverend Pinckney's Sunday broadcast this week. We had everybody in the house except Reverend Pinckney. He's under house arrest, and he is under gag order and cannot use the Internet at all at his house, and his wife can't use it at his house. She has to go elsewhere to use the Internet. So what happened is that Reverend Pinckney did a recall for the mayor in Benton Harbor, Michigan, and that recall petition that he did was examined zealously by the local officials there in Benton Harbor, Michigan, and they have charged Reverend Pinckney with election fraud. And so he's at home. He's okay, but he cannot communicate by electronic means online. He cannot read emails. He cannot respond to your emails, and neither can he conduct his own radio shows or anything that involves the Internet. So we're asking people that when you write your emails, when you write your articles, when you write your Internet posts, put the hashtag #SupportPinckney. You just put a pound sign, and after that put #SupportPinckney, and you spell his name P-I-N-K-N-E-Y. Thank you, Dr. Ansara, for allowing me to make that announcement.
Oh, my pleasure. That is ridiculous. And I want to applaud Reverend Pinckney for being progressive. And the reason why I say that is because after the 1964 Civil Rights Act, the NAACP, all of the civil rights organizations, fell on their rear end because at that point, they should have taught us what Reverend Pinckney is doing. In order to implement civil rights measures or any legal measures into a hostile political community of congressmen and senators and those and local politicians, mayors and their staff, the weapons that the citizens have to make sure and to push their issue of civil rights and inclusion is we have three weapons, and Pinckney exerted one of them. And this is something that none of the civil rights organizations, from my knowledge, have ever done. And the weapons that were supposed to be used and that we will look at in our classes, in certain ones of our classes, on how to get the United States to move to be constitutional and to incorporate human rights, we have three weapons. One is the one that Pinckney used, recall. When a politician does not do or live up to the exercise his office in behalf of the people that elected him, under the democratic rubric, there is a way to recall that official, even the president. And if he wasn't a lame duck, we should move to impeach President Obama, because these are politicians that are, if it's true that he signed that NDAA Act, which allows any untrained officer to throw us into a concentration camp without any kind of articulable suspicion in due process. If he did that, that is an act that is impeachable. That is an act that is impeachable. Because that's just an unconstitutional act.
Well, not only did he sign it, but I want you to know that probably three-fourths of the Congress people and senators, at least three-fourths of them also approved it. I want you to know that in Georgia, our Congressman Hank Johnson refused and Congressman Lewis refused. So I was very proud of them in that one act that they did refuse, thank God. But probably over three-fourths of our representatives in the House and in the Senate did vote for NDAA with its provision to lock Americans away in concentration camps.
That is sickening. If that is how it occurred, and I'm not doubting it. It's so incredible. I just have to review it because it flies in the face of constitutional law as well as international law. But if that was the case, I didn't give you the other two weapons. The other weapon is referendum, and a referendum is that the people, we can organize people in a referendum and have an issue, should we abolish the NDAA? And if the majority of the people say yes, then that overrules
Wonderful. Are you
then
there?
I just have to change phones, but yes. And the other one is plebiscite, in which and succession. These are the ultimate aims when you have a government that is totally oppressive. You can decide in a democratic fashion to move out of the authority of that government. And these are some of the things that we will have to examine because of the state of these laws, if they are like we think they are.
Oh, well, they're definitely like we think they are. Also, I want you to know that we do have one organization that's making great strides, and they're employing a technique that I think is different from the three that you named, but it may be in the three that you named, but in a different form, and that is PANDA, P-A-N-D-A, and you can look them up. What they're doing is influencing state legislatures to nullify NDAA. Now, I don't know how these states can nullify a federal law, but many states have done that. Michigan nullified it. I think the first state to nullify NDAA is Virginia. That was the first. And now we have a handful of states that have put in place state laws that nullify NDAA. Now, here's
there is a way that states can do it because we don't actually live in a democracy. Most people do. It's sort of like a pseudo form of democracy. It's actually, we live in a Republican state. And when I say a Republican state, that means that each state is a sovereignty on into itself, and the state has control over its own police power. So because we're talking about police powers, locking up people, throwing them in detention camp, the states can say, hey, you can't tell us what to do with our own state citizens. We don't have to abide by that. So under the state power, and I don't know, they may be calling it PANDA, but under the state police power, the state can nullify a federal directive for them to do something concerning their state citizens, if that action is not involved in any kind of interstate commerce, and it's not a good or not something that breaches the borders of that state. But anything within that state so they don't have to follow that federal directive. A state could nullify the federal, and you know, we're having that situation with the marijuana laws across the country, in which states pass, you know, their acceptance, and the federal say, no, we don't like it, you know, but we have federal marijuana laws that have passed in California, Colorado, and about 12, 13 other states. And so, yeah, that's a possibility. And African Americans especially, and citizens especially, have to really understand what kind of power we can exert. Code Pink, the gay rights movement. All of these movements have used what Reverend Pinckney did without the backlash. Reverend Pinckney probably should have had, and I hope he had, a lawyer there that could, you know, and even if he did have one, that's not to say that the corrupt city police would have said, oh, this signature looked like it's a duplicate. We had that kind of fiasco in Florida over a presidential election, and they didn't arrest anybody and put anybody in prison or in jail. So for them to arrest Reverend Pinckney is another abomination, and to say that he has a gag order is a violation of his constitutional right to political expression, which is the highest form of expression that is protected in the United States, is another abomination. So what we're looking at in the Reverend Pinckney case is a total roughshod of these rights, and that's why Dr. Pinckney and those types should be UN human rights defenders, because if he was a defender, then the only thing we would have to do is to alert the United Nations. They're holding a human rights defender in the United States because of his expression. And they would send someone and write the government so they would have to explain. This is the reason of the power of being a UN human rights defender.
That's so wonderful, Dr. Ben. Sorry. The last thing that I wanted to bring up to you is the fact that on Saturday we had our first interview regarding James Costner's fast. As you know, yes. James Costner is a human rights advocate out of the state of California, and he's going on a hunger strike. He said it will be a hunger strike to the death if necessary, demanding the release of certain political prisoners and demanding the prosecution of certain police officers who have been accused of murder, and also demanding an end to deportations of U.S. immigrants. So that's James Costner, and he's going on a hunger strike beginning May 13th. I want you to address that a little bit. You only have 1 minute.
Thank you, Mary. Well, I intend to join James Costner in that fast for political prisoners as well as our kids that have been gunned down by the police. Every 36 hours, one of our children is gunned down and killed by police with no reaction, proper reaction from the state. So I will be joining James Partner, and we'll be advertising the fast on